Yeah. Next time will be more impressive.
Yeah, I'd like to start because I'm going to take some time out to hand back the exams. For those of you who just wandered in, though, you can see that you can all have a big sigh of relief, or most of you, because the class as a whole aced this exam, you know. And the people who don't ace it know what they did wrong, probably. So today we're going to do the New Negro Movement, as much as I can get in. Oh, I keep forgetting, Ryan. I have to remember to tell them that a light is on. And it's on page 12 of your study guide. Everybody, what's the matter? Okay, so I'm on page 12 of your study guide. I do not call it the Harlem Renaissance, and I would say that more contemporary scholarship does not call it the Harlem Renaissance because too many things that are important took place outside of Harlem. And the New Negro Movement encompasses things not only in the United States, outside of Harlem, but also things in the Caribbean or in Europe. So I just prefer that you call it the New Negro Movement. The New Negro Movement is usually dated, and this is, you know, give or take, whatever, 1917 to 1935. And it is a word that was coined by the scholar Alain Locke in 1925 when he was a professor of philosophy at Howard University in Washington, D.C. So Howard University is, I think it's probably considered the flagship university of the name just slipped out of my head, but it's basically the black college system. It's called there's an official name for the historically chartered black colleges in the United States. Does anybody remember? Okay, it has an official name. Whoops! But Howard University in Washington, D.C. was one of the first ones, and I think it's still considered the flagship, although Spelman College in Atlanta would dispute that. That's two of the most famous ones. Okay. According to Locke, the example of African art should replace the usual examples from Greece and Rome. There should be what he called a very important here. That although the New Negro Movement is basically a middle class movement among American blacks, they look to what they considered the sort of the example of African art as a high art form, but they also look to their own popular arts. And that's one of the things that makes it different from other art movements of the period. So, the popular arts he would call, in his book that he did in 1925, the folk tradition, okay? The other most important scholar behind this movement is W.E.B. Du Bois. And I think you probably hear much more about Du Bois these days than you do about Alain Locke. Du Bois wrote a very important book called The Souls of Black Folk in 1903. And this is the next part is why you hear about him all the time. Du Bois proposed a double consciousness or a two-ness. And I think that this is what is always, always, always quoted about Du Bois. How to deal with the fact that one is simultaneously a Negro, so that's a capital N, folks, and an American. So there's this two-ness, major thinkers who are behind this movement. And the movement itself then has a twofold agenda. An understanding, through an understanding of African American arts and culture, Black Americans will discover their rightful place in United States history and then look to their own roots. So again, their own roots is this really sort of dialectical tension that artists even feel today between what's considered the classic Black African arts and the folk arts of the Blacks in the United States. Okay, so there's still a tension even in the 21st century. And a lot of African American artists do art based on this tension as contemporary arts. It's really important that you understand this. Du Bois was the editor of one of the important journals of the movement, which was called The Crisis. And The Crisis was published by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, still in existence today, still important. And the fifth sort of element coming in here is something called the Harmon Foundation. Okay? The Harmon Foundation became the major patron of African American artists in this period. And between 1928 and 1933, they sponsored art exhibits and sent African American artists to Paris to study. And they will be, they're very well taken care of in the film I'm going to show you, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But William E. Harmon, this is in the first paragraph up here if you're looking around on page 12, was a philanthropist and a real estate baron. His father was the white officer in charge of, if any of you studied African American history, the famous 10th Cavalry in the United States. Okay? So you get the white officer in charge of the 10th Cavalry and then the son of this officer, you know, forming this foundation. They sponsored these juries exhibitions, and between 28 and 33, they exhibited about 125 African-American artists. It was huge. Only certain of them have come down historically, but it was huge. He was a historian and a bibliophile originally from Puerto Rico. Okay, he's important. And in 1911, he founded the Negro Society for Historical Research and then moved to the United States and began organizing art exhibits in 1921. And in 1935, he gave his huge collection to the New York City Library located at 135th Street in Harlem. That library is the Schomburg Library today. It's the most important library for doing research on African American culture and doing photographic research, all sorts of research. So I think those are, yeah.
Could you repeat his name one more time?
Arturo Schomburg, S-C-H-O-M-B-U-R-G. Fascinating man. Can't, you know, these survey courses are hard because I like to go into. But Puerto Rican, African descent, bibliophile, and this the Schomburg Library, you know, is I've done research there. It's very important. So I'm thinking, oh yeah, then the New Negro Movement really is a developing dialogue between diasporan people on both sides of the Atlantic. And that's because Paris played such an important role in the New Negro Movement. And I don't have time in this course because this is one lecture out of, you know, many, but there were many artists in London of African descent and in the Caribbean who participated in this. And I just don't have time to, you know, to go through it all. So with that beginning, we will start. I'm starting with a woman who I'm using to introduce the movement. She is a little before the movement in terms of her dates. Oh yeah, this reminds me of something that happened on the exam too. Her name is Meta Ora Fuller. Now turn the page, because I'm not going to talk about all those artists, but check off the ones I'm talking about, okay? Meta Ora Fuller, a sculptor, and the piece you're looking at on the screen is plaster, and it was done in 1913. So that's what I mean, I'm using her to introduce this whole movement. Returned to Philadelphia in 1902, and a fire in 1910 destroyed all of her her early work. So this is one of the reasons we don't have decent color photographs of her work, because some of this early work was destroyed. Now, the name of this piece is Emancipation. And I think that even though stylistically it kind of fits into Rodin and late 1800s sculpture in Paris, it's the theme of the work that becomes so important. So she calls it Emancipation, and, you know, it's the idea of the black coming out of the block, coming out of his or her past, coming, you know, emancipated from all levels of slavery, because there's psychological slavery as well as physical slavery. And this is very early. It's 1913. Her two most famous pieces are this one, and this is where it would be nice. Ryan's still trying to teach me a lot. I'll get slide comparison. Stone painted. And this one should be a plaster. What it says here is plaster full figure bronze cast, New York Pub. So I'm not really sure if it was bronze cast from a plaster model. I think the slide is labeled a little confusingly. But what I want to do, 1914, I want to talk about them and compare them in a moment. What is, aside from the fact that one's in color and one's in black and white, what is the big difference in the two? Let me go back. Okay, this one and this one.
The hand?
Yeah, it's the hand. And it's so interesting, I'm not the first person to talk about this, how one hand gesture can liberate an entire work of art. Do you see how she has opened up as a work of art simply because of that hand opening up, where in the former one she's still sort of contained in her cast form? Okay? But they're both called either the Awakening of Ethiopia or Ethiopia Awakening, and that's what I want to concentrate on for a moment. So this is, again, this sort of Egyptian-esque, Ethiopian-esque type of motherland. So the word title was used a lot, but there's something also much more specific happening here. I'm going to read it so I don't get it wrong. Fuller was aware of what Ethiopia denoted both in and outside the African-American community. So listen, the 1885 Berlin Conference had initiated the partitioning of Africa by Europeans. Only Ethiopia had successfully repelled the Italian army in 1896. Quintessentially important, right? Only Ethiopia repelled the Italians. In 1903, Fuller completed a commemorative plaque in honor of the Emperor of Ethiopia. And she also knew about a pan-African religion called Ethiopianism, okay? This was it was a religious movement, Ethiopianism. It Its adherents were obsessed with the Coptic biblical prophecy, quote, Ethiopia shall soon stretch forth her hand unto God, close quote. And so these are all the different reasons why I'm using this as an introduction, right, for this lecture, and also to help you understand that the artists I'm talking about in this lecture, in very different ways, they do not share a style. They absolutely, it's not like Cubism or Impressionism. They share a point of view about the world, and I think that's also important. Because in normal, traditional art history courses, you're taught that that style is the bottom line of art movements, and I'm saying, no, it is not. I'm saying there's something beyond style that can unite artists.
What year was the...
1914 are the two.
Both of them?
Yeah. So here we have another artist who I'll talk about a little bit now and much more later, but I want to connect it to what I've just read to you. Her name is Lois Mayu Jones, look on the list. And she was born in 1905. She died, I was going to say really recently, and I looked at the date and I thought, whew, time flies. 1998, almost 10 years ago. To me, it seems like yesterday. Okay, Lois Mayu Jones. And the name of this piece is The Ascent of Ethiopia, 1932, Oil on Canvas. So let's just, before you find out, an Egyptianizing image right at the bottom, right? Somebody have a phone on that's ringing? No? Oh, it's up here? Oh, gosh. Okay. So here we have this. Then we have the pyramids. Then something really interesting. These are stars in the sky. Somebody's going to guess, but anyway. And then we have people leaving Africa, the transatlantic slave trade, right? And this is the folk. Can you tell this is the folk? This is the popular that we talk, that I talked about. And they come through this ray of light. And this ray of light here, so they walk through it. And, you know, up this hill. And the ray of light seems to be emanating from one particular place. Yes, it could be the sun, but there is a black star in the sun. You know what I'm going to say then. Well, hang on, okay? And I knew a couple of people in the class might know it, okay? Then they're moving up, and they're moving into culture, right? They're moving into the urban world of culture from the south, from Africa to the south, from the south, migrating up to the north. These constellations as follow the drinking gourd, which if you've studied African-American history, you know that when slaves escaped the south and went north, there were certain songs that they sang, which are called hymns today, I think, but they referred to certain constellations, and it was a way to find their way in the woods, in the fields, without the owners knowing where they were going. You know, it was a way to communicate with one another. The most famous song is Follow the Drinking Gourd, right? The Big Dipper is the drinking gourd, right? So I think that that might be a reference here. The other thing, and I'm pretty sure of this, but never know, is that that beam of light coming down is referring to Marcus Garvey and the Black Star Lines, his shipping company. I'll be going into that in a minute. Marcus Garvey and his shipping company, his fleet of ships that were supposed to take people back to Africa to live the good life. You subscribed. It's a long, complicated story, but you subscribed to Garvey's position. You sent in money. He was trying to raise money for this. He's originally from Jamaica, came to the United States. They tried to throw him in jail. They tried to make him quiet etc., etc. And it didn't work. And I'll show you a photograph of him coming up later in the lecture. But I have a feeling that that was the Black Star Line, okay, of Marcus Garvey. Here you're looking at one artist that we're going to talk about, one that we're not, but just this is Jacob Lawrence, who I'll talk about at the end of the lecture, and Richmond Barthet, who I'm leaving out today, registering at the Harmon Foundation. You don't have to memorize it or anything, for, you know, for the art shows. And here you have the next artist I'm going to talk about, Aaron Douglas. And this is Aaron Douglas's cover, as you can see, for the journal Opportunity of June, oh, it says so right on it, June 1926. Douglas's dates are 1899 to 1979. He arrived in New York City in the mid-1920s. He studied art in New York City, and he worked in a style that is known as Art Moderne style. He did many, many illustrations for Opportunity, and here's another one of his. Now, remember the importance of Africa, and I want to show you. So this is his cover, and this is the photograph that he copied from. Okay, she is a Hmong Bantu woman. The photograph was taken in 1924, and this is what he did with it on the cover. So it was this. The Hmong Bantu people are highly photographed and publicized in a lot of different places. Yeah. Yeah, art décoratif is, let's say, for a survey course like this, is the same as art moderne, that industrial kind of, yeah. Okay, so here we have the Harmon Foundation cover by another artist, and I'm really only doing this, I mean, I would never put this on an exam, but I want you to see sort of the range of styles that these artists did, because I talked about this. This is William H. Johnson, and again, it's a Harmon Foundation catalog cover. So you can see how different the artists are one from another. And then I want to talk momentarily about James Van Der Zee, should be on the list today, but one of his most famous photographs is this one, and it's 1924, and here is Marcus Garvey in his limousine car, and this is Marcus Garvey right here. This is his bodyguard. One of the interesting things about the Garvey movement and Marcus Garvey, and if I get to my Haitian art lecture this semester for you all in this course, is that many peoples of the Caribbean took the leaders of the Haitian Revolution as their heroes. And the leaders of the Haitian Revolution is the first country to become independent in the Americas, and we've never forgiven them. They are the poorest country in the Americas, always. And their leaders appropriated the French uniforms from the French Revolution. Okay, so you get this idea of black leaders appropriating French revolutionary dress, and here you have Garvey sort of doing that same thing, but it now in New York City. So this is James Van Der Zee's portrait of Garvey. And then again, for this whole period, for free at these workshops. Hang on. Yeah, so this is the Harlem Art Workshop was established with the help of a woman named Augusta Savage, and she had gotten Harmon Foundation scholarships also, and she opened a school in Harlem in 1931 and 32, and she was very important. She was a fierce supporter of the black arts movement. And I wanted you to know about this only because she was so fiercely anti-colonialism and such a fierce fighter for racial equality. She was very left-wing. So in the 1930s, you read that as communist. For those of you who've taken American world history classes, you know, sort of the 1930s labor movements and everything. She's been written out of a lot of art histories because of it. So I just sort of wanted to mention her name and sort of bring her back into, you know, I like bringing women back into our sort of consciousness when they've been written out of things. And so just a photograph to remind us of that. And back to Aaron Douglas, okay? Aaron Douglas became successful. Here's one picture of him. I'll show you another one. He's a little bit younger. He was very, very successful in sort of using modernism, this art, modern style, and modernism with black historical and vernacular themes. He probably was the most successful of the artists to combine a style that was popular with themes coming from the New Negro Movement. So I want to show you what this was, how it worked in his own art. Once you learn Aaron Douglas's style, you will never confuse it with anybody else. He specialized in large-scale murals for schools, libraries, community centers, etc. And just to give you an idea, he at the Schomburg Center, the public library in New York City, he did a series of paintings called Aspects of Negro Life. He did a series for the 1936 Texas Centennial Hall of Negro Life. He did a series at the 135th Street Library, and it's this is one of his pieces there. I don't really want you, even though they're on e-reserve, don't knock yourself out with the titles to his pieces. As long as you know the context they were in, the dates, and can talk about them, I don't want you to look at the titles too much because I think some of them are wrong. And I haven't sort one of a student I know is doing a 20-page paper on Aaron Douglas this semester, so then I'll be able to help straighten it out. Okay? But let's look at this. Now, remember Lois Mayu Jones, The Ascent of Ethiopia, okay, while we're thinking about this. So here you have a wheel of industry. Do you see that? And here you have the black folk working with industry. And then do you see that there's a series of rays here? And that at the center of it, what do you have? Well, music, right? So you have this idea of, again, from the workers to culture, the progress of the race. Let's look at another one. This is 1933. It's at a different public library in New York City. And again, this goes back to, that's the one you just saw, then you get this one. And this goes back to, again, another drummer. And here's an African sculpture. These are African warriors. So if you look at this and then look at this one, you see how it's from our roots to culture, right? So it's that whole middle class black look at history and the arts and the sort of the progress of the race that's being talked about. Here's another one. It's at 135th Street also, but at the YMCA. And it's called Evolution of the Negro Dance. This is all Aaron Douglas. And so you're going to get, it's going to start over here. So you're going to get his way of expressing the sort of the folk in the fields or the folk, the roots of our culture. And then you get the transformation here into the banjo. They're wearing a hat. Right, there's a couple dance here.